Darling, your tyrants and kings on the scene. Strung up at your city gates. You're last to die from his scheme. The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Wow, what a start to a new week, huh? It's Tuesday, I know, but we start our week here on Tuesday at the Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network. And yesterday was Eclipse Day. The whole, at least, country was mesmerized by the moon casting its shadow on the sun and blocking it out for, you know, a couple of minutes, depending where you were. I got to tell you, one of my favorite moments, and I don't watch Fox News, so I didn't see it happen live, but I was seeing online this morning all of these clips of Fox's Shepard Smith freaking out over the eclipse. And I thought, really? Was he that taken by it? And I found this little compilation. Let me just share it with you.
This is Total Eclipse of the Sun Watch 2017 on Fox News Channel. The excitement must be building and building like fireworks. If I put this here and my phone here, I have a total eclipse of the phone. Fascinating. It's amazing. Oh, my God. The moon has gotten in front of this. Okay, well, I don't know. It's interesting looking. The sun looks a little like the moon up there in my wall. If you mention it, you got to sing it. Where the deer and the antelope play. Wow! Would you look at that? It's a total eclipse of the sun.
And you look up at
they know this is all it's going to be, right? Out. Just a moon over a sun.
Oh, he's making fun of you.
Now. Are coming out.
Oh my goodness, that didn't last long. Yoo-hoo! I want to hear more. No, because now you can look at the thing. It's covered, so you can look at it. Oh my God! The sun is returning. Jalapeno. How was it? Response: weird, dark, cold, another dark, amazing. I love nature. Amazing. I'm going to die now. And we hope that doesn't happen. Yeah. Want to see a total eclipse of this monitor?
And he puts a piece of paper in front of the monitor.
It's totally eclipsed. Mm-hmm. Well, we're having a good time, too. And there's some people who think we should take this a little more seriously on the Twitter. Because for us, this is just a lot of fun. We've been watching the path of totality so you can catch a DC on screen if you run. Do you know that it goes like old NASA stuff from the 70s whenever you move around? It's because of the sun. No, and then over on MSNBC, it's just sort of dark and vacant.
It was
They're
serious.
Not gonna have a, what is it?
Total
not a total eclipse of the sun down. The sun is 400 times larger than the moon.
Who knew?
But the sun is 400 times farther away from us than the moon, which works together nicely. So here, it's a little darker than usual, but it's not, like, dark.
That's
according
how it was
to one
here.
Legend from ancient China. Mm-hmm. People were scared that a dragon might eat the sun, which it's always something to consider. How was it? Was it everything?
So that was a little compilation that the Washington Free Beacon put together of Shepard Smith, I guess, freaking out over the eclipse. Can you tell he was being a little facetious? He was making fun of everyone who was so excited by it. He sounded like my husband. David thought the whole thing was ridiculous. He's like, it got dark and then it got light again. And here in Florida, of course, we didn't get the whole thing. The lighting was a little eerie, but I really didn't go outside because I didn't want to screw up my eyes. And I didn't have the silly glasses. So I watched some of it on TV. I watched MSNBC, and they were oh so serious. And that's, you know, it was kind of a good thing and a bad thing in that it seemed for hours from the, you know, 10 o'clock, whatever, when it first happened in Oregon until 3:49 or whatever time it happened in South Carolina, they were wall-to-wall eclipse. Now, granted, it's kind of a cool phenomenon, but really? But on the other hand, I thought, how nice is it to get away from all the Trump news for even for just a few hours? But I thought that was kind of humorous, the Fox Shep Smith. And again, the way it was, I think I found that on Mediaite or one of those sites. And it was Shepard Smith freaking out over the eclipse. I thought he was one of those people who was really freaking out over the eclipse. Then there was Tucker Carlson, who actually said this.
The path of totality, as it's called, ran from Oregon to South Carolina. But almost the entire country saw at least 60% of the sun covered up by the moon. Even the president saw it, but in a move that is not a complete surprise, he looked directly at the sun without any glasses. Perhaps the most impressive thing any president's ever done.
Now, you know, I don't watch Fox, so I don't know, is that Tucker Carlson's sense of humor or is he serious? Either way, it's not funny and it's quite frankly absurd. But it did get our minds off of the bigger picture for a few hours. And unfortunately, at 9 o'clock last night, our minds got to return to the bigger picture when Donald Trump took to the stage at Fort Myer in Virginia in front of a whole assortment of military personnel. Is it just me, or normally if a president is going to make an announcement about war strategy, isn't that something they'd do from the Oval Office? He had to be in front of a crowd. Thankfully, this crowd was quiet. They were dead quiet. There were no applause lines. There was no cheering or hooting and hollering, which is, you know, what Trump likes so much. He'll get some of that tonight in Phoenix. We'll get there. But so he goes up on the stage and he starts reading from his teleprompter in that monotone, horrible. He's got the worst delivery of any president I can remember ever. But he proved, Samantha B. wrong. He can read. He proved he can read. He sounds like he's reading, you know, a book report in third grade, but he proved he can read. And what he read was really disconcerting. Now, if you listened at all during the campaign to candidate Trump, or even before the campaign to citizen Trump, you would have thought this is a guy who was going to put America first. This is a guy who was not going to ratchet up wars. Hillary Clinton was supposed to be the warmonger, remember? But what did we get? Well, here's a little bit of Donald Trump's new Afghanistan strategy.
Conditions on the ground, not arbitrary timetables, will guide our strategy from now on. America's enemies must never know our plans or believe they can wait us out.
Okay.
I will not say when we are going to attack, but attack we will.
Oy.
We will not dictate to the Afghan people how to live or how to govern their own complex society. We are not nation building again. We are killing terrorists.
We're killing terrorists. So no specific strategy, no number of new troops who are going there, although it's supposed to be somewhere, excuse me, around 3,900 to 4,000. How that's going to make a difference. When at one point we had like 100,000 troops there and we still couldn't win. Now there's like 8,500. So they're going to add another 4,000 troops there. Like that's going to make a difference. No timetable. Nothing that tells us what it means to win, how you know when we're going to win, when we are winning. There's so much and a whole lot of nothing. But he started his whole new Afghanistan strategy out with something that was written by, I wish I knew who the speechwriter was, because I'm guessing it wasn't Stephen Miller. Steve Bannon is out, so the number one white supremacist in the White House is gone. But there's still Stephen Miller and Sebastian Gorka, both of whom, well, Stephen Miller is Jewish, so I guess he can't technically be a Nazi, but he is a white supremacist. Sebastian Gorka, he's the Nazi. They're both still there. Stephen Miller has been known to write, you know, speeches for Donald Trump. And what I don't get is, I'm sure he didn't write, the first part of the speech last night was all about, you know, our nation's kumbaya moment, about, you know, he listened to the five of the seven of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who tweeted that there's no room for racism in the military. And it was sort of paraphrased a little bit at the beginning of the speech. I'm not going to play the whole thing for you because there's a lot of this in What's News, and it's bad enough that I subject you to it once, let alone twice, but just a little taste.
The men and women of our military operate as one team with one shared mission and one shared sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They transcend every line of race, ethnicity, creed, and color to serve together and sacrifice together in absolutely perfect cohesion.
All right, so it goes on like that. And again, because you'll hear much of this clip in What's News, I'm not going to play it for you twice. Laffy has a good point in the chat room. Maybe it was one of the military guys, because, you know, he likes...
I like generals. I think generals are terrific, you know. Yeah. They go through schools, and they sort of end up at the top of the pyramid, and it's like a test. They pass the test of life. That's how they got to be a general and other people didn't. So I sort of like generals, and I like the three that I have very, very much.
He likes the three that he has very, very much. So maybe one of them wrote that section of it. And he read it like the good little schoolboy that he is. Now, the real test will come tonight when Donald Trump takes his circus of a 2020 presidential campaign to Phoenix. Yes, that's who rented out this arena tonight. It's Donald Trump 2020 presidential campaign who rented out the arena in Phoenix. Why he's going there? Who knows? Maybe to pardon Joe Arpaio, maybe to ratchet up the hate a little more. Let's see the lines of parallels, or what is the opposite of parallel lines that he raises tonight, because he won't be speaking from a teleprompter and he won't be reading some general's words about racial harmony in the military. So tonight he'll be in Phoenix. The other question is, he's calling for the war in Afghanistan to continue with no end in sight. We'll know we're winning when we see it, somebody actually said. Meanwhile, the next thing on Donald Trump's domestic agenda, I believe, is tax reform. That's the fancy way of saying he wants to cut taxes for, well, himself and his rich cronies. So he's proposing this never-ending war in Afghanistan continuing and cutting taxes at the same time. Is this Bush 3.0? He's just going to keep putting it on a credit card or something? I got to say, I'm glad Bannon's out of the White House, but Bannon and the Breitbart folks are freaking out, because the one thing that Bannon was right about was wanting to get the hell out of Afghanistan. Now Bannon's gone, and we're sending 4,000 more troops in. And he wants to cut taxes at the same time. I don't get it. I have no answers for you. Maybe God a laugh does. And the stock market is up. Of course it is. Unbelievable. We'll take a break. We'll get What's News out of the way. You'll hear his putrefying general's words, because you know he didn't write them. So after What's News, we'll come back with Got a Laugh, and we'll, you know, shoot the shit about the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show. We'll be right back.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
In a nationally televised primetime speech Monday night, the president put forward his long-awaited strategy for the war in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, he didn't specify the number of troops that would be committed or explain the conditions by which success of the mission would be judged. He did, however, say we would win.
And in the end, we will win. We must address the reality of the world as it exists right now, the threats we face, and the confronting of all of the problems of today, and extremely predictable consequences of a hasty withdrawal. America and our partners are committed to stripping terrorists of their territory, cutting off their funding, and exposing the false allure of their evil ideology. Terrorists who slaughter innocent people will find no glory in this life or the next. They are nothing but thugs and criminals and predators and, that's right, losers. Working alongside our allies, we will break their will, dry up their recruitment, keep them from crossing our borders, and yes, we will defeat them, and we will defeat them handily.
Trump did admit that this strategy was a change in direction for him.
My original instinct was to pull out, and historically, I like following my instincts. But all my life, I've heard that decisions are much different when you sit behind the desk in the Oval Office. In other words, when you're president of the United States. So I studied Afghanistan in great detail and from every conceivable angle. After many meetings over many months, we held our final meeting last Friday at Camp David with my cabinet and generals to complete our strategy.
Before getting into the generalizations about his new Afghan policy, Trump used the beginning of his speech to deliver the message of unity and national healing that he failed to deliver after Charlottesville.
The men and women of our military operate as one team with one shared mission and one shared sense of purpose. They transcend every line of race, ethnicity, creed, and color to serve together and sacrifice together in absolutely perfect cohesion. That is because all service members are brothers and sisters. They're all part of the same family. It's called the American family. Loyalty to our nation demands loyalty to one another. Love for America requires love for all of its people. When we open our hearts to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice, no place for bigotry, and no tolerance for hate. The young men and women we send to fight our wars abroad deserve to return to a country that is not at war with itself at home. We cannot remain a force for peace in the world if we are not at peace with each other.
Following the president's address, CNN hosted a town hall meeting with Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. Jake Tapper pressed Ryan on his unwillingness to criticize Trump for his seeming defense of the white supremacists, Nazis, and Klan members in Charlottesville.
I think the issue that Eric was expressing is the reluctance to criticize President Trump for specifically saying things like very fine people were marching in that rally that had swastikas and anti-Semitic chants. And there were not any very fine people in that rally.
That's right.
And it wasn't morally ambiguous. It was morally wrong
what the president said. Let me just add to what you just said. I have a hard time believing if you're standing in a crowd to protest something and you see, you know, all these anti-Semitic slogans and the high Hitlers and the swastikas, that you're good with that and you're a good person. You're not a good person if you're there. That's just so very clear. So I totally agree with that. And that's why I think, it was not only morally ambiguous, it was equivocating. And that was wrong. That's why I think it was very, very important that he has since then cleared that up. And I think it was important that he did that tonight.
Do you think he's done enough?
I don't think any of us have done enough. I think we all have a lot more to do. I think we all got a lot more to do in this area, and I think we have a lot more to do to make sure that these guys don't get normalized.
On Tuesday night, Trump is holding a campaign rally in Phoenix, Arizona. This despite being asked by the mayor to stay away because his appearance and expected pardon of former Sheriff Joe Arpaio would inflame emotions and further divide our nation. A major protest is expected outside the rally. The nation seemed to come together Monday as the Great American Eclipse made its way across the country. From 10:15 a.m. Pacific time in Oregon to 2:49 p.m. Eastern time in South Carolina, our attention was on the sun and the moon, and not Washington, D.C. And that's a bit of What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these segments, I hope you'll consider a contribution. What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener-funded, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bungie? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
And now, it's time for the Nicole Sandler Show segment. Shooting the shit with Laffy.
Oh, it is that time of the week again. Hello, gotta laugh.
Yes, you've reached the bankruptor in chief hotline.
Ah, oh, good.
Yes, press 1 if you think the Secret Service ran out of money because Trump required so much protection against ex-wives, Robert Mueller, and rogue spray cans of self-tanner. Press 2 if you think Trump's moral bankruptcy outsized his other bankruptcies, the way anti-Trump protesters outnumbered the 20 losers at the so-called free speech rally.
Now, come on, there were 40.
Oh.
Sorry.
Update. Press 3 if you think his golf resorts will soon go bankrupt because Trump has no balls.
Ooh. Well, because all of his business enterprises go bankrupt. And
yeah,
and you know, and that's what he wants to do to the country. Not that we're not already, you know, in debt, which is okay. And that's a topic for another day. But how does he plan on escalating this never-ending war for the foreseeable future and beyond, and cut taxes at the same time?
He can't. Oh, and now there's a big battle a-brewing, among the Republicans,
yeah,
because some are for the wall and some are against the wall in terms of subsidizing it with the budget, you know, putting some money into the budget. And so now we've got a big, you know, with the government shutdown thing,
yep.
Now we've got a real big fat threat to that, making the government shutdown more possible, because there really is a little bit of infighting in there. I've been reading tweets from various news sources saying they're at each other's throats about this, and it could very well lead to a shutdown.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are some, you know, and it is the Bannon crowd that they want the wall. And then there are others who are more realistic who say, mm-hmm. you know, the wall is bullshit. And by the way, this guy told us, you know, these just point out his lies. See, all through the campaign, it mm-hmm. was going to be America first, right? He wasn't going to nation build. He wasn't going to be waging war everywhere. But also, Mexico is going to pay for the wall. And now there's
right.
no talk of Mexico paying for the wall. We're going to pay for the wall if there is to be a wall. And so they have to raise the debt limit. Remember that annoying little debt limit? Well, it's got to be raised by the end of September. And there was some talk that he would sign a clean debt limit bill, which is what Obama always asked for and they'd never give him. Now he's saying he would sign that, except there are those who say, no, he's got to get the wall funding in there. It's a mess, and it's only going to get messier.
Mm-hmm. And I've also been hearing that whole tax reform, tax cut mm. for the wealthy, for corporations, is pretty much going to go nowhere. Although they may get a tax cut bill somewhere, a little, you know, not a tax reform bill. That's going to be out of the question. They may get some tax cuts, maybe. passed.
How? I mean, look,
I don't know. I've been hearing it over and over again.
Right. But between, you know, this ratcheting up in Afghanistan and his threats mm-hmm. against North Korea, and he wants, what, $56 billion more to rebuild the military and mm-hmm. all this. How does he cut taxes? How are you able to cut taxes at
absolutely
a time like this?
Absolutely no idea. I don't even have a clue. You're absolutely right. They're spending on this. They're funding for this. They're defunding things that shouldn't be defunded.
Oh my God.
They just cut the advisory board for climate change, mm-hmm. Which is only 15 people. But you know what I'm saying? They're cutting everything. Yeah. Everything that is good is going to be gone or severely cut back. And everything that is bad, they're looking to subsidize. So I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. I guess we wait and find out.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of good fighting going on. What I'm really interested in, I mean, as you were bringing up in both, you know, the pre today's news, what's news thing, and in the what's news thing, is what is tonight's ego rally going to be like? Is it going to be a complete, you know, Trump-a-palooza thing, or is he going to in any way try to maintain the semblance of dignity he supposedly had last night, which I don't think he had, but people are saying he did, which is wrong.
Right.
So
it's the script he was reading. And this here's the thing. We still don't know whether or not he's going to pardon Joe Arpaio. There are conflicting reports that he can do it, but no paperwork has been filed to do it. Allegedly, Arpaio hasn't been invited to the event. The thing is, if he does it, this is not only a slam to every judge in the nation, but it's 5 million giant steps backwards from his beautifully scripted words last night. That
right. Love,
yes,
love.
You're right. Racial harmony, peace. We all, it's kumbaya. And because what Arpaio was convicted of is racial profiling.
Right. Right. He's the epitome of that. He dress him up in his own pink underwear, put him on a cake and call it racial profiling. Happy birthday. You know, he is the face of that. So, yes, if he pardons him or if he makes noises about pardoning him, you know, he may not get up there and say, I hereby say I'm going to pardon him. He'll probably, I'm guessing, because he's getting so much flack for it, he may just say, well, you know, it could be. I'm not sure yet. I'll give
stay
it some
tuned.
Thought.
Stay tuned.
Yes.
We'll
yes,
see what happens.
Exactly.
Because
right.
that's right. what he does.
In a very short period of time, as he always likes to say. Such an
he'll
idiot.
He'll find
God,
out.
He's such an
right.
idiot.
And then if he doesn't do it, he'll say nothing more about it. And if hopefully someone would stop him. I don't know.
I sure hope so. This is just an utter disaster. Worse than, I always thought it would be really bad because of his policies, but I wasn't sure it would be this embarrassing. He has the most humiliating, abysmal failure of a presidency I could imagine.
Well, you know, it was one, I forget which show it was, but on one of the Sunday shows, Douglas Brinkley was on, presidential historian.
Yeah.
And I've got a clip to play. Oh, it was, I know which show it was. It was Reliable Sources. It was Brian Stelter. And just, well, listen to what Douglas Brinkley said, because he says it plainly and clearly.
Senator Corker is a real leader among Republicans, and it was very brave of him to step out and really talk about the fact that we have an incompetent president, and what does that mean for our country. There are things that can be done right now. I mean, on the medical front, look, we all know he is a neon billboard for, you know, overt narcissism, malignant self-love. We've all known that. And now we're seeing that we're getting the ramifications as a nation of what having a sick man in the White House means. I think the Senate might need to move forward. He's not mentally stable, and we need a perhaps the Senate needs to do a censor coming up here. General Kelly is going to have to continue to try to stop him from taking to the mics and dividing our country like he did at Trump Tower. There's got to be some effort to control his tweets, but the government's going to have to run. The White House has to run almost around the president. And, you know, we saw Nixon with H.R. Haldeman, you know, he would tell Haldeman, go bomb Brookings Institute, Nixon, or go bomb Wounded Knee. And people just started disregarding what Nixon said. Henry Kissinger regularly didn't listen to his president. I think we're at that state now when the five generals of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have to go out and enter politics and say, we want nothing to do with what the president is saying. It is a crisis going on in the White House, and it's about Donald Trump's fitness for command.
But so he made a lot of really good points there. You know what the problem is? You want five generals controlling the government? We want a military coup?
Right. Exactly. Oh, my God. And meanwhile, wait, I just put this up and I've lost it. Where did it go? Oh, I tweeted out an article from the LA Times. And the reason, I mean, I'm sitting here listening to all this. And what was going through my mind was 25th Amendment.
Right.
Why can't, you know, and because, I mean, truly everybody agrees that he's nuts, even the people who won't say it mm-hmm. in Congress. And I ran across an article in the LA Times. And basically, it's why the Republicans are sticking by him. And the quote that I put up is, Trump support remains big enough to threaten Republican elected officials who might break with him.
Yeah.
So that's what the crux of it is. They his poll numbers are still high enough
among Republicans. Right.
Yes. So that they don't want to mess with their base. If they go home and see that their base is still supportive of all these terrible policies and of Trump in general, they're not going to lift a finger to do a thing about him, no matter how crazy he is. That just tells you what's important to them. They are important to them. Their own careers are more important to them than the health and welfare of American citizens.
It's astounding. It really is.
It is.
You got to wonder about these people who there are, you know, his numbers have fallen. I mean, his approval ratings among Republicans that were up around in the 80s. And now right. I think they're in the low 70s or high 60s, still too high. And I guess it depends on what poll and the day of the week. And sadly, because talk of war somehow gets people thinking that he's a serious guy. His approval ratings are probably inched up a little bit this morning because he read straight from the teleprompter and didn't ad lib.
Right. Well, today's Gallup poll actually had him drop down to 35% again
really?
With the disapprovals of 60, their daily tracking poll. So maybe people aren't doing that as much as we suspect, but there's a reason that he rushed. There was no reason he had to do this so quickly. There was no reason he had to hold that particular, you know, have that particular speech put on the air at 6 p.m. or 9 p.m. your time mm-hmm. To the whole world and interrupt everything. And why did Pence rush home and cancel all kinds of things that he was supposed to do? The only reason I could think of is because his poll numbers were dropping so low, they were hoping this would boost him up
yeah,
again.
Yeah, to stop the bleeding after Charlottesville, because his
right.
response was so reprehensible.
Exactly. So, yeah, he's in deep trouble, and he's doing everything he can to manipulate himself out of it, at least enough to stay afloat. And, oh, my God, what he's getting us into with you know, Pakistan and India.
I know.
What does he think? Anyway, you want to go into TweetSpot? I've got about 1,000
sure.
tabs up besides my tweets.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Welcome to my TweetSpot.
All right. What you find on the Twitters?
Tweet, tweet, tweet. All sorts of things. Okay, I have a bunch about the bankruptcy thing. Chuck Wendig, who's a writer, he's an author. Just to clarify, he says, it would seem that not only did our president bankrupt the Secret Service, but funneled that money to his own businesses.
Yeah, well, every time Trump is at one of his golf properties, which has been over 60 times in the 7 months he's been in office, they pay tens of thousands of dollars to rent out golf carts for the Secret Service to follow him around on the golf course. So
right, $60,000 worth.
Amazing.
$60,000.
That doesn't even include the hotel rooms and everything else. So every time he goes to one of his properties, we're paying those properties to house the Secret Service.
Yes. Insane.
Unreal.
It's insane. And we all just sit back and let it happen. Hello. I mean, we're screaming our brains out, you know, and tweeting our brains out and writing our brains out and anything else we can do to remove our brains from our bodies. Meantime, the Republicans are sitting on their butts saying, oh, well, you know, okay. Okay, so Dean Obadiah, did mm-hmm. I say that right?
Yes.
I always screw his name
yeah,
up.
You got it.
Comedian, writer, activist. He said, that awkward moment when you ask Trumpers, how do they know solar eclipse is happening today? And they have to avoid saying, because of science.
Right. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
that was
I guess,
sort of a theme.
And Trump looking at the sun, I guess that's his way of saying we don't need no stinking science.
He's so stupid. Oh, my God. Okay, Rocky Mountain Mike, who, if you don't know, he did a few of my Blunt videos. And then he also, he's a song parody writer. Mm-hmm. He's terrific. His stuff goes on the Stephanie Miller Show. Yeah. It's all over the internets, and I adore him. Anyway, he said, he quoted Saturday Night Live's Colin Jost, who said, "If you think white supremacists are upset this week, just wait till next week when even the sun turns black."
Yeah, we saw that. You know, they're doing the weekend update on Thursday nights now.
Yes.
For the summer. And yes, I laughed at it when I heard it the first time.
Yes, I love it. I love it. It was well worth repeating. Jennifer Bendery of the Huffington Post said, a friend at National Air and Space Museum says Ivanka Trump showed up, cut in front of hundreds of people in line, and got a private view of the eclipse there.
Why am I not surprised?
That's, and as I said in return, those are the entitlements I'm willing to cut.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, this is sort of related, but not. And it wasn't on Twitter, but Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got a whole thing on that.
Do you? Okay. Then I'll wait till you get to it.
Yeah. I've got the quotes and everything. We can talk about that. I have a few. I have like five or six tabs up about that from different people. Anyway, Carl Frisch, our friend Carl Frisch, said presidents usually wait until final days of their presidency to pardon people. Maybe we should be excited that Trump may pardon Sheriff Joe.
He doesn't understand that, though. He doesn't know what, you know, what the protocol is or how it usually works.
He doesn't care.
No, and doesn't care. And that's
right. I mean, if someone said to him, "Hey, you know, supposed to wait on that," he wouldn't. He'd go, and that would make him do it earlier.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Everything he does is the opposite of what he's supposed to do intentionally. He's such an ass. Joel Searby, I hope I'm saying that right. He was Evan McMullen's former campaign manager, and he was, you know, commenting on this Trump looking into the sun during the eclipse. And he said, "This captures the entire presidency in a single picture, doing exactly," and this is what we're saying, "doing exactly what he's not supposed to at the risk of lasting damage."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly. So I was thinking, think of all the things that people could make him do by simply telling him not to do them.
Resign. No, don't resign.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Go stick your head in a pot of oatmeal. You know, just stupid stuff. He'd go, "No, I'm going to show you."
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a perfect tweet by Joel Searby. So Brian Stelter, that you were referring to from CNN, some pundits are already predicting a, quote, "good night for Trump." This was about last night's speech.
Right.
Quote, "this will help him." Quote, "positive message." They're talking about a costly war.
Right. And because he read, but it's true, because he read from the teleprompter, didn't deviate, didn't ad lib, and he was talking about a war, made him seem strong. He's tough. He's a, you know, tough guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I have some of my own tweets up about that that we'll get into later that comment on that, because I did a preemptive.
Uh-oh. Laffy? I think we lost our Laffy. Did we? She just went dead. Let's get her back on the line. I wonder what happened there. I hope it's not her computer. Mid-word. See what happens? Uh-oh. Are you back?
Yeah, did we lose each other?
I lost you. Mid-word, you just, boom, you disappeared.
Oh, stupid Skype. This is, you know, Windows 10.
Uh-oh.
Skype, I made me sign in with my birthday today. I had, in order to get on,
and had to make sure it was you.
Birthday. Oh, but please, give me like a secret, you know, grandma's first name or something. God. Anyway, I was quoting Ben Rhodes, Obama's former a foreign policy advisor.
Right.
And he said, "why is it always deemed presidential by pundits to extend or escalate wars and bomb other countries?"
Good question. Wish I knew.
Why is that a thing?
Because,
like,
because that's something only the president can do, when actually the president can't really do it. He should not be able to do it on his own. It should take an act of Congress, yet our Congress seems to have forgotten that.
You know who hasn't? I've forgotten her name, and I've met her, and Barbara Lee.
Barbara Lee has not forgotten that.
She has not forgotten that.
Right. Well, and she got something put into the budget for the Defense Department about the AUMF, and Paul Ryan took it out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, we finally got somewhere after years of her trying. She actually got Republican support in her committee for
almost,
that.
Almost unanimous support, actually, in the committee.
Yeah, they took a voice vote, and you could hear everybody say aye, except I think there was one little lonely,
right.
Eh.
Yeah.
Eh. It was a little Republican. Anyway, Norm Ornstein also responded. He's the American Enterprise Institute, who always has interesting things to say. And he said, why is that an army of pundits keep trying to normalize an utterly abnormal narcissistic sociopath who was president?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've got one along those lines. So Maggie Haberman of the New York Times tweets out a quote. We are not nation building again. We are killing terrorists, says POTUS in one of his more forceful / best lines of address. Matt Taibbi retweeted it with the comment, no matter how bleak things get, a president can always amp up a war to get good press again.
Bingo.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, it's wag the dog. Anyway, I'm trying to see what I've got in relation. Well, okay. First of all, I have a tweet up from yesterday. Oh no, I already went there with you. This was the thing where we could make him do whatever we want by, cause he looked in the sun by, you know, don't do it. Don't look in the sun. And he looks in the sun.
Right.
Don't do it. Don't quit. He quits.
Yeah. By the way, the thing that with Tucker Carlson, apparently, again, here for those who weren't listening, that Tucker Carlson said this.
The path of totality, as it's called, ran from Oregon to South Carolina, but almost the entire country saw at least 60% of the sun covered up by the moon. Even the president saw it, but in a move that is not a complete surprise, he looked directly at the sun without any glasses. Perhaps the most impressive thing any president's ever done.
A pretty asinine statement, no matter how you take it, right? Well, someone named Maxwell Tanney tweeted via a spokesperson, Tucker Carlson says this was, quote, a test to see if liberals are really as slow and humorless as people claim. Turns out they are. That's like Trump throwing out, a bullshit line, like, telling police officers to rough up people they arrest when they put them in the car and saying later it was a joke. That's what this is.
Exactly. He got caught.
Yep.
That's the thing is. And then they wiggle out of it by saying,
it was a joke.
Oh, it was just joking. Everything's sarcastic. If you're just testing. Yeah. Testing.
Like Trump saying to Putin, thananking him for firing all those diplomats because it helps us save on the payroll. It was a
exactly.
joke.
Clearly a joke. Everybody was laughing so hard at that.
Oh, yeah. As I always used to say to Allison when she used to say it was a joke, I always would say a joke is supposed to be funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if your audience is, I used to tell my comedy classes, if your audience isn't laughing, it's their perception that matters, then you weren't being funny. I don't care how funny you thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
Not a joke. And if you hurt somebody's feelings, it's not a joke.
And when the president is talking about serious shit, it's not the time to joke. That's not his job. You want to be a comedian, stay being a reality TV show host. Don't be president of the United States. If you want to be funny, go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But you chickened out of that, you chicken shit asshole.
Exactly. You don't get to, as president, your words matter. Everything you say
Everything.
Is a presidential statement.
That's right. Everything.
Including your damn tweets.
Right. And you don't get to say, a day later, oh, that was just a joke. No, that's not your job. You're not the MC of the country.
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's keep that one.
Okay.
Tweet that one out. That's good. Okay. So
I'm
I was
busy
watching
right now.
The TV.
Hmm? Yeah. I'm busy right
yeah.
now.
Okay. I was watching the TV and I'm watching Republican Congress members and pundits come on and say that Trump's little empty platitudes about loving and, we have to love each other at the beginning
yes.
of the speech.
Right.
Those are beginning to neutralize those racist things he said. They think wrong. No, they're not. They do not neutralize or negate or compensate for any of the racist stuff he's said or done. Just because he claims the word love belongs to him in a sentence and that somebody wrote for him and he could read it off a teleprompter, and just because he can make up little facial gestures that maybe look sincere, no, he's still a racist. He still believes what he believes. He still has policies that are racist, so that he supports, like voter suppression, voter ID, you name it, the Muslim ban, all of those things. I don't care how many times he says he can love somebody or we should all love each other. He's still a racist.
Yeah, he is.
I love the poorly educated.
Yeah, sorry. Shut up, Donald. Shut up.
So my little warning to everybody yesterday before he started speaking, I said tonight Trump will default to, quote, tough guy, the only one who can win in Afghanistan, wrong, reading someone else's words on a teleprompter, don't buy it. Pundits will say how presidential he was, mm-hmm. will praise his very serious reading. Then he'll tweet something insane, blather, wince, repeat. And that's pretty much what happened. He hasn't tweeted craziness yet, but he will.
Well, tonight is going to be enough crazy for everything. I'm dreading tonight. Really dreading tonight.
It's going to be cringe. Do we know what time it's going to be on?
I don't know.
I don't either. Anyway, then he, in his speech, he was saying how, you know, he's going to defeat the Taliban, but he never lets us know how. Mm-hmm. So basically, he has this ultra super duper double secret plan to win something that we can't know about. But because if we knew about it, we'd lose whatever it is we're supposed to win.
Sure. And it's not an unlimited. Wait, what did he say? It's.
However, our commitment is not unlimited and our support is not a blank check.
Then tell us what the limits are and tell us how much money it's going to cost. Oh, wait. Sorry. There were no details.
Because they don't know.
Right.
They're pulling it out of their ass like they always do. They have a general, just like with the tax plan, they have this sort of one page that probably says we're going to win. You know, number one, win war. Number two, which war? Well, we'll tell them later. Number three, it costs money. How much? We don't know. Number four, win war. I mean, win.
Yeah, win. We're going to win. We're going to kill
then
terrorists.
Then I asked, this is the other thing. You know that sentence he said about, well, once you're in the White House, in the Oval Office, all of a sudden things are different. And even though I wanted to pull out.
Right.
If that's the case, if he's admitting that everything is different than he expected, and once you're in the White House, you can do a 180, then why is he continually bashing Obama for things that either he changed his mind on or that he disagrees with?
Well, the thing
he's same problem.
Right. I mean, basically, hate to say it, he's continuing Obama's strategy in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Yet he'll still keep bashing Obama for doing it wrong because only he can do it right. Only he can fix what's going on in Afghanistan. He knows
only
better
I
than
can
the
fix
generals.
It. That's
right.
Exactly. Okay, now this is what you and I were talking about in chat today.
Mm-hmm.
Tillerson came out today and did a press conference, and he said, and this is a quote, Tillerson, U.S.'s, this is from ABC, U.S.-Afghanistan effort means to tell the Taliban, quote, you will not win a battlefield victory. We may not win one, but neither will you. So he's saying that nobody wins, and that's how he's trying to sell us his war.
Quagmire! Yeah!
It's the forever war, and they own it now. And
yes.
He won't even say we can win it. He's just saying, let's just do it. Let's just do it.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So Tillerson says, yeah, you won't win, but we won't win either, but that's okay. Wait, I think there's audio here. Hold on. Let me see if this will play.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay.
I think the president was clear. This entire effort is intended to put pressure on the Taliban to have the Taliban understand you will not win a battlefield victory. We may not win one, but neither will you. And so at some point, we have to come to the negotiating table and find a way to bring this to an end.
Yeah, to do that, though, you need diplomats. You need people at the State Department who can actually do diplomacy, and they don't have anybody there.
He claimed they do now. He claimed that they've got some really good people, and he named them.
Oh, really?
And he was talking about that because Andrea Mitchell specifically asked him about that in that press conference today. And I got sidetracked and didn't get to hear who he said and what he said, but I did hear enough to hear that he was, oh, no, we've got this one and that one. Oh, what, do they have two people? Is that what they've got? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Before we get into the Louise Linton thing.
Yes.
We want to talk about.
Yep.
Just wanted to give you a little news update. MSNBC says that Peggy Noonan's joining NBC and MSNBC as a political contributor now.
I saw that on Meet the Press.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if she'll have a mimosa before she comes on.
Yes.
She always sounds drunk to me. Always sounds drunk.
That was the replies that I got when I tweeted that today. Everybody said the same thing.
That's funny. Great minds.
Also, here's one that I think you also put up. Sinclair's chairman is eyeing a collaboration with Steve Bannon. Bannon.
Yes.
For those who don't know Sinclair, and I'm quoting, Sinclair forces its local stations to air pro-Trump propaganda and then seeks favors from the Trump administration worth billions.
Yeah.
That's from the Financial Times. It's a paywall, so I couldn't get further.
And no worries. We're going to actually do something on Sinclair in either next week or the following week. I'm working on somebody who I saw on TV who was really good, who's going to come on the show.
Oh, good.
So we'll get more info on
I am on that. So glad you're doing that. I'm going to be like retweeting that
podcast. Well, you know who it is. Do you remember, I don't know if you saw him. He was on with Joy Reid when she filled in for Rachel Maddow one night. His name is Ramesh Srinivasan. And he was talking about I think he teaches at NYU, if I remember correctly, but it could be somewhere else. And just so happens I got pitched on a book that he wrote called After the Internet. But I remembered him from that interview, and I said, you know, I'm interested in finding out about this book because I'm sure it's somehow related. I said, but I'd really love to talk to him about this. And he said, yes, absolutely. So we're just
wonderful.
Trying to set it up.
I did see that. So that's fantastic. Okay, so do you want to set up this whole...
Yeah, so Louise Linton, you might remember Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, just got married like a few weeks ago, if even that long, to this woman, Louise Linton. Well, they went on a little trip on a government plane here. Louise Linton, the wife of U.S. Secretary, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, belittled an Instagram critic as adorably out of touch on Monday night in response to criticism of her lavish lifestyle. Linton had posted a photograph of herself getting off a U.S. military jet accompanied by hashtags for luxury items and brands, including hashtag Hermes scarf, hashtag Tom Ford, and hashtag Valentino. The post was met with scorn by some social media users, with one woman in Oregon writing, "Glad we could pay for your little getaway, hashtag deplorable." Linton responded with a tirade in which she told the woman, "Your life looks cute," and urged her to, quote, "go chill out and watch the new Game of Thrones." Linton set her page to private after the outburst, but not before screenshots of her comments were picked up by the New York Times and other outlets. "Have you given more to the economy than me and my husband, either as an individual earner or in taxes or in self-sacrifice to your country?" she wrote. "Pretty sure the amount we sacrifice per year is a lot more than you'd be willing to sacrifice if the choice was yours."
Yeah, she goes on, "I'm pretty sure we paid more taxes toward our day trip than you did, than your sacrifice line. And then, you're adorably out of touch. Thanks for the passive-aggressive nasty comment. Your kids look very cute. Your life looks cute. I know you're mad deep down. You're really nice, and so am I." There's no punctuation here. Sending me passive-aggressive Instagram comments isn't going to make life feel better. Maybe a nice message, one filled with wisdom and humanity, would get more traction. Have a pleasant evening. Go chill out and watch the new Game of Thrones. It's fab.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Russ Kick of the Memory Hole put up a screen grab today of the whole thing.
Wow.
The original.
Wow.
Maggie Haberman also tweeted, "Can't make it up. Louise Linton, an actress, played Marie Antoinette at one point." Perfect.
I don't know who this woman is.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. But she's obviously another rich entitled.
Yes, she did some acting and modeling, and somebody put out a tweet of her wearing just barely wearing some underwear with very high heels, big platform shoes. So they called it soft porn. I didn't do any research. I can't confirm if she did real soft porn, you know, but that's what they were calling it. Walter Schaub, who used to be in
the ethics department. He was the head of the ethics department in the White House.
Well, he tweeted a couple of things. I'll read you two of them. He had a whole thing, a whole tweet storm. But he said, "Bad ethics tone from POTUS leads entitled appointee / freeloading spouse to ask not what they can do for country, but what you can do for them." And then he went on to say, I lost it. I put the same. Oh, here. "It's the mocking tone as she tells another human that she's worth more and has more claim to this land. That's what really chews on my skull."
Valerie Plame Wilson tweeted, "It's a little let them eat cake, don't you think?"
perfect. And then Steve Schmidt said, I said, she's been Schmitted because he's good. She matches the secretary's moral cowardice and complicity in inspiring white supremacists with a sublime early 21st century classlessness. Nice. At Richard Painter, it said pure greed, and that he was responding to Richard Painter's pure greed line. So yeah, she got it from all sides.
Stephanie Ruhle, who does the hour after Morning Joe, and then does a thing with Ali Velshi too on MSNBC. She tweeted, "Dear Steve Mnuchin's wife, if you believe history repeats itself, go check out Pretty in Pink. Molly Ringwald wins in the end."
I like her. She's going to be on Alone tomorrow. Ali Velshi is going to be off for the day, so she'll be taking over that hour, and then he'll be back. They'll be back together again on Thursday. They do a show on the weekends for half an hour. Mostly it's about economics, but they break things down so beautifully. You know, like if you ever have a question about something that Trump is saying regarding the financial world or taxes or you name it, they break it down and they call him out on every single lie.
Yeah, you know, I always liked Ali Velshi. I liked him when he was on CNN. And then Stephanie Ruhle, when I first saw her, my first mm-hmm. thought was, now MSNBC hired a Lindsay Lohan lookalike? Because she does. She looks just like her, and it freaked me out. But then I watched her, and you know what? She's good. She asks good, tough questions. And like we've discussed before, I don't necessarily agree with everything she said, but I shouldn't. I mean, I really don't want to agree with everything somebody on television says. But I do like when they have an opinion, and they're usually on the right side.
I know, I agree. And they're both really good, individually and together, Velshi and Ruhle, at challenging their guests. Sometimes they don't do it as much as I'd like, but when they're on, when they challenge them, they don't let up until they get some kind of an answer or definitive non-answer. You know, like, okay, this guy's not going to have anything to say to us, so we'll drop the subject now. But they're very good at fact-checking and going after people who out and out lie on the air.
Right. You know who else has gotten pretty good, and it really surprised me, is Katie Tour.
Yes, I like her. Yeah.
She was the one, she got the short end of the stick when she, for the campaign, was assigned to cover Trump.
Right.
And I'll never forget the day when he came down the escalator and then he sat for an interview with her. And I thought, who is this blonde bim? She's just not good. She just really wasn't very good. But she's done a total 180, and she asks tough questions too.
I actually thought she was better than you thought she was on that first interview. I could see that she wasn't sure whether she should fight back or just let it wash over her, mm-hmm. and she chose to let it wash over her. But what I liked was that she didn't give in. She held her ground, and she just kept, you know, asking him questions and trying to get answers. She did not stand up for herself in that particular interview, but she, in a sense, did. She didn't let him get to her.
If I could stand it, I'd go back and listen to it again. But
yeah, I know. Who wants to watch that? That was horrible. And he was so belittling. He was so rude to her. It made me sick. I guess maybe that's why I had a natural affinity for her, because I thought she seems okay, and he's just being an ass. So,
right. No. Well, she really, I thought, grew tremendously throughout.
Yeah, she really
the campaign,
has.
And
yeah.
She's good now. And with that, there's the music. That means we're cutting close to the hour. You know what we're doing tomorrow?
Oh, what?
We're going to see what the rest of the world thinks about us. Well, not so much the rest of the world, but our friend Dennis Campbell, you know, UK progressive,
yes!
is going to be here just because he and I chat online a lot. And I thought, I wonder what they're saying about us over there now. And so I invited him to come on and talk. So we'll find out.
Give him my regards. I love Dennis.
Will do. Gotta laugh. Find her on the Twitters. 2 T's, 2 F's. Gotta laugh. Because if you don't, you know the alternative. and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, take care of yourself.
Okay, you too. Bye, Laffy.
Okay.
All right, so yes, that's tomorrow. Gotta laugh. Thursday, Howie Klein will be here. On Friday, it's going to be the return of Drift Glass. Drift Glass has not been on this program since before I left on my hiatus last summer to have surgery. So, so we got a full week coming up. Tomorrow, the beginning of the show, though, there will be plenty of room for your phone calls. So if you watched what happens in Phoenix tonight, we can talk about that. Just if you're there, please stay safe. This show is 100% listener supported, so if you got a few extra bucks you can spare, just know I can't do it without you. NicoleSandler.com/donate. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'll see you tomorrow right here on the Progressive Talk, Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com. Thanks again, everyone.
It's Tuesday, August 22, 2017.
Across the U.S. Midwest, farmers are blaming widespread crop damage to millions of acres of farmland on a new version of an old pesticide.
Monsanto pesticide, approved by secret process, is decimating crops. Trump disbands Federal Advisory Committee on Climate Change. Court lets Exxon off the hook for Arkansas pipeline spill that destroyed a neighborhood. Plus, the National Park Service ends the ban on plastic disposable water bottles.
Because of course they do. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Reuters examination has found that the crisis has its roots in weak regulatory oversight and corporate secrecy.
Because they all do. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, there has been much talk about Donald Trump and his various business advisory groups disbanding. Well, now he has disbanded a climate advisory group, but they're not going away that easily.
No, they are definitely not. Just days after President Donald Trump rescinded a federal requirement that infrastructure be built with sea level rise projections in mind, now the administration has disbanded a federal advisory committee on climate change that makes concrete recommendations for long-term planning on a wide range of issues, from building codes to water infrastructure to road projects to even managing energy supply.
So the people who would have told him, hey, it's a bad idea to not require federal infrastructure to be able to withstand flooding, Donald Trump just got rid of those people.
Yes, it was supposed to help communities plan ahead for the impacts of global warming. But in an interview with The Washington Post, the committee's chairman, University of Maryland geology professor Richard Moss, said the group intends to finish their report anyway, saying, quote, "We're going to be running huge risks here and possibly end up hurting the next generation's economic prospects."
So good for them. They're not going away that easy.
No, they're not. Meanwhile, Midwest farmers have asked the EPA to investigate serious crop damage that the farmers say was caused by a new formulation of an old pesticide, dicamba, that drifted onto fields with crops unable to withstand it. An investigation by Reuters has now found that the manufacturer of dicamba, biochemical giant Monsanto, blocked independent testing during the approval process. Monsanto explicitly prohibited university researchers from testing the new formulation's tendency to vaporize and drift across to other fields. The Obama administration EPA approved it anyway, according to Reuters.
Monsanto provided its own study of the advanced weed-killing chemical to the EPA, which determined that based on the information it had, the product was safe to use.
The EPA simply took Monsanto's word for it?
Yes, that's how pesticides pretty much get approved in the United States.
And that's how our federal government worked before Donald Trump came in to do away with the quote-unquote regulators.
Also, the Trump National Park Service has ended a ban on the sale of plastic disposable water bottles in the nation's national parks after aggressive lobbying by the bottled water industry. The ban was instituted in 2011 after Park Service data showed discarded plastic bottles were the biggest source of litter in the nation's parks, killing animals that mistook the plastic pieces for food and straining the National Park Service's already inadequate budget to clean it up. Despite data showing that the ban reduced the burden and cost of plastic bottle pollution, the bottled water ExxonMobil off the hook in the 2013 pipeline spill in Mayflower, Arkansas that ruined an entire residential neighborhood. The court overturned nearly all of a $2.5 million fine imposed by the U.S. Pipeline and Hazardous Hazardous Materials Safety Administration for failing to adequately monitor the 70-year-old pipeline. Exxon argued in court that the pipeline spill wasn't its fault because the regulations didn't specifically warn them that they needed to more closely monitor that type of old pipeline. The court agreed with Exxon. In other words, if you lobby to weaken regulations and then there's a problem, you can blame the weak regulations for not stopping
it. Wow.
And a new report calculates that overall, fines for polluters in general with the Trump administration have dropped 60% under its first 6 months. That's compared to the same period of time for previous presidents, according to a new report from the Environmental Integrity Project, an environmental watchdog nonprofit group.
Incredible. Game the regulators and then blame the regulators. They got you coming and going, don't they?
They certainly do.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, and there are a lot of them, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Play the game, play the game, play the game, play the game.